And welcome back to the United Masterclass, the first one of 2023. And Rob, what an amazing one to be talking about today. Manchester United have come from behind to have a fantastic victory against Manchester City in the Manchester Derby. This sends Ten Hag's Reds just 1 point behind City. And it really was actually a tactical masterclass by Ten Hag, even though United had much less of the ball. United were very, very good when they had the ball and they pressed fantastically well. And we will talk about that today. They restricted Manchester City just to one shot. Rob, the question I'm going to ask you, we don't want to get too high and we don't want to get too low, but are Manchester United in the title race?
By forms of definition, Manchester United are in a title race because that's what the league table tells us. How we feel about whether this will continue or whether Man United will get better or worse and all that doesn't really matter. In a snapshot of time, we are in a title race and we deserve to be in it. I think that's the other key here. So a wonderful way to have our first masterclass back in 2023. Obviously, we've had a bit of a break and now we're here. And to win the Manchester Derby, not just in the way that we did, but I think with all the way the whole game played out, there's so many positive things to talk about in terms of Manchester United. And that's kind of what we're going to try and do today. We're going to talk about what Ten Hag did, how he set the team up, maybe some of the changes away from what people again believe that United wanted to do or were doing, or was it 4-2-3-1 or was it something else? Well, we'll delve into that. We'll kind of give you all the answers. But we also want to kind of talk about how these players are functioning now under a new manager, because we've had this period, haven't we, from the start of the season to the present day. Manchester United are now 1 point behind the champions, Manchester City. And I think they showed on this game, and this was the big kind of takeaway in a nutshell, is that Man United can hang with these boys now. And that's not something we've ever even said. Even when we've beaten City in previous weeks and months, when we've talked about it on our show, it's always been a little like, oh, we outworked them, or, you know, we just ground it out, or we fought hard and all of that. No, Man United have got tactics, and we're going to talk about all that today.
Absolutely. And guys, you can follow us on and Man United MC. I am actually just off Twitter at the minute, just taking a little bit of a detox, but you can catch me there. So, you know, if you've got any questions regarding any future shows, just make sure you tweet the at Man United MC page and I'll endeavor to get back to you. And you can follow Rob, and as always, on at _Rob_B. Rob, before I go into the agenda for today's show, I'm actually just going to read out some comments because I'm absolutely loving the positivity. And it feels like a long time since we've been able to say that. You were out Old Trafford yesterday, and, you know, obviously I messaged you yesterday saying I am so jealous, because what an amazing, amazing victory. The atmosphere felt like a real turning point. We've had 10 years of really drab performances, players maybe not putting as much effort in, tactically not at that level. We saw, you know, Ten Hag, in my opinion, you know, outthink and out sort of, you know, strategize Pep yesterday, which is no mean feat. But actually saying here, you know, still buzzing, let's go. That win felt bigger than 3 points, an important step for Ten Hag and the squad. We've got Colombo here saying 10 years since Fergie retired. Could it possibly happen? I'm sure he's talking about winning the league. Surely not, but you never know. Glory, glory, Man United. And then we have a few others here saying, what Morgan's saying here, we actually have a team that seems to be worth a lot more money now than it did in the summer. Credit to Ten Hag. He's improved so many dead players in about 6 months. I think that's one of the most positive things for me, Rob, is that when I look at Ten Hag and I look at the squad, you know, when I look at player to player to player, nearly every single player has improved. And there's players, I'll hold my hands up because I think it's important to admit when you are wrong. I preferred Pochettino. But I'm so happy the way it's turned out. Ten Hag has surprised me in how he's handled certain situations, the big egos, the big decisions. The other thing, I also wanted Rashford sold in the summer. I'm sure there's a lot of people who did as well. And he's playing at an unbelievable level. So going into today's agenda, we will be talking about the formation and selection. United played a 4-3-3, but what we saw was more of a 4-2-4, and we will explain that today. We'll also talk about Jack Grealish's goal and how that happened, because United were fantastic in the first half at stopping City, you know, sort of getting, you know, De Bruyne making those runs, you know, into the half space. We'll talk about Bruno's goal as well, because I'm sure the all but Uniteds are livid that that goal stands. But Rob, we're going to show why it did stand. We're going to talk about Marcus Rashford's goal as well and how that happened, how United managed to turn that game on its head. And then we will also touch on Veghorst at the end, because our big Dutch striker has joined the club and he will offer something different. And I'm excited to see him play. So before we go into that, we've got a fantastic tweet here from Alex Turk that we wanted to share, because it just shows how much progress United have made since that defeat in October to City, the 6-3 drubbing. So United have played 19 games. They have 16 wins. That's 84% win rate. That's two draws and one loss. That loss coming at Villa, unfortunately. But, you know, United have shown some great character since then. 38 goals scored. That's two per game. 12 conceded. That's 0.6 per game. 11 clean sheets. That's over 50% of the games United kept a clean sheet. 9 wins in a row. 10 home wins in a row. I believe that's the first time for a very, very long time. And they're the only club still in 4 competitions. As Alex said, just getting started. That is a sublime turnaround when you think about the first two games of the season. And you also think about the City game as well.
Completely. And, you know, why do we talk about stats so much on the Masterclass? Because stats do matter. They kind of do show a bigger picture, don't they? So we all know where we were, say, when we got hammered on the road at Brentford and what the team was doing and what the team wasn't doing and why Man United couldn't score goals and why they were hemorrhaging goals. Those things needed to be fixed. They can only be fixed on the training ground and through coaching. So I think this set of kind of stats now, as we've seen here, like a win percentage of 84%, which is outrageous. 2 goals per game, which is very, very good. This is top level. 9 wins in a row, only club in all 4 competitions that they still remain in. I think it's fair to say that Ten Hag is doing his job. This is kind of what we're trying to assess, isn't it? Game to game to game. Yes, things will ebb and flow. Maybe they'll get even better. They might slide off a little bit. So I think this performance level is fantastic. You might run into a few kind of brick walls here down the line at some point. I think all of this shows is that there is a new understanding from this squad about what the expectation is. Let's not pretend that under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, if I can get my words out, that the players didn't understand. Of course they understood. They 100% understood. But you need a plan. You need tactics. You need to be able to move forward. And when we used to say, don't get too high, don't get too low, what I always really used to really mean was don't get too low. Because you've got to fix it. It takes time. So don't just get too low when things are bad. You can get too high when you beat Man City in this fashion. So I think we've kind of come a long way in a short period of time. And it just shows how you can accumulate quality with the same amount of players. We always said this. The squad is not as bad as it really looks. But it's not also a case of that you have to bin everyone. It isn't. You want to bin everyone. I know that's how it feels. But it's more important to get them a coach that can take them to the next level. And we're seeing that with pretty much every Manchester United player that plays a minute on our football pitch.
Well, just to add to that, before we look at the formations and we go into the tactics game, we talk about the intangibles. You know, we talk about commitment, hard work, discipline.
Yeah.
Whilst Ten Hag, we knew this at Ajax. You watched Ajax play last season and through Ten Hag's time over there. You could see. You don't have to be an expert to see. He's obviously very tactically astute. But actually, what he's done off the pitch, and I mean, we haven't done a masterclass in a while, so we haven't had a chance to talk about this, but, you know, Marcus Rashford oversleeping and then getting dropped is also such a big turning point in the squad to turn around and say, well, Cristiano Ronaldo's gone now. We won't tolerate what, you know, the sort of behaviour that he was doing. Marcus Rashford, the star striker, scoring goal after goal, the man looking like to lead this Ten Hag revolution, sitting on the bench because he's overslept. So it shows, you know, that Ten Hag is the boss. And we've been saying this. We saw with Ralf Rangnick, I know he was only the interim, even with Ole to an extent, there was a big player power issue in the squad. You know, if someone didn't want to play, then they wouldn't play. If someone wants to go and do rehab, they're going off to Dubai. Like, no, there needs to be a structured plan where the manager's at the top. These are the non-negotiables. These are the intangibles that you have to do off the pitch. And every single player will adhere to it. And if you don't, you are out the team. And that has completely transformed the club in the last 6 months. And it's only been 6 months. And I'm actually quite shocked at how internally we're seeing the players, you know, sort of get right behind the manager and they know that he's a boss. So while we've been fantastic on the pitch and we can see the tactical improvements, the fundamentals, Ten Hag's principles, I'm even more impressed actually what's happening off the pitch, knowing the club's looking to get sold. There's so much uncertainty. There isn't a lot of money sitting there as well in the reserves. And there's been a big issue with culture. And Ten Hag's almost fixed that single-handedly.
Yeah, like there's no money in the reserves at all. So like, again, the thing that Manchester United relied on for 10 years is just splashing money, isn't it? Make revenues, make profits, dividends go out to the owners, spend load of money on players, 1.5 billion or whatever it is now in the last 10 years. You need a coach. You need someone that actually is there on the training pitch with the boys every day going, right, you did this really well in the last match, but that was awful. Don't ever do it again. You need that. So, like you just mentioned there, the Marcus thing about falling asleep, like it's much ado about nothing, but it's important that if you're the leader of a group of people, that you set the rules and you tell them what your expectations are. And if they don't meet your expectations, it's not hammer them or like, you know, publicly go and sit in your presser, like say again, like Jose used to, and belittle the players. It's educating them and saying, well, you won't play then. Sorry, you missed the team meeting or you were 5 minutes late. I do believe with Marcus Rashford, he was something like 2 minutes late. He wasn't like 20 minutes late or an hour late. He was 2 minutes late. 2 minutes. He got dropped. Good. That's what you're supposed to do as a manager. You're supposed to be able to say to a player, you do as I tell you, not as you think I tell you. So that's all really good. I think you see it with Ten Hag. He's a disciplinarian in the modern sense, in the same way that Pep is. Pep has those standards at City. He says this is what he wants from his players. I think we're seeing with Manchester City at the moment, they're not quite meeting their standards. It's part of the reason why they are where they are and not doing what they were doing last year. It's happening at Liverpool. Liverpool are having a struggle. They had high standards. Those standards have dropped off. What happens? You're in trouble. Man United have gone the other way. Standards gone that way. Arsenal, standards gone that way.
Rob, is it motivation?
It depends what you call motivation, because a lot of people would think earning 200 grand a week is motivation, and it isn't. Education is motivation. Knowing what you're doing and what the expectations are is exactly what the motivation is. I think what we're seeing now is a Man United squad that know what they're supposed to do. So when you want a team to press, you can't dream it into existence, Haydar. You've got to go and practice it. And you've got to get it wrong 20 times to get it wrong, to get it right once, and then get it right 20 times. So this is how you develop squads. City did it. Liverpool have done it over 6-7 years. And eventually your time comes and goes, like you fall off the mountain. Eras are there to be kind of start, to be finished and to end. And United are kind of at the start of one now, I think, with Ten Hag. I don't want to ham it up too much. But this is what you're seeing. You're seeing very defined tactics. One thing Guardiola said in his presser yesterday afterwards was that the core difference between, say, Solskjaer's United and Ten Hag's United is that he can now see patterns of play. And we've spent the whole of this show, every series, going back to when we first started there about saying how United don't have patterns of play and how detrimental it is in the modern game. So now you've got the manager that proves that he can do it with his players. And just the signings, I think, that have come in, the Casemiro's, the Eriksen's, you know, Martinez didn't play yesterday, but all the new fresh faces have kind of put that motivation in the rest of the squad. They've come in to do a job. And it's like, you all better do your job as well, because otherwise we're going to pull you out here. So that's great. I think it doesn't matter about age. It doesn't matter if you're the greatest striker of all time. You talked about Cristiano before. If you do not tick the box, you do not play. And I think that's where this manager kind of starts, begins and ends.
Spot on. Guys, so many of you in the comments today, make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, turn those notifications on. If you see this as well on Twitter, make sure you give a retweet so so many more United fans can get involved in this conversation. The Masterclass is back and United are on the up. So, Rob, let's talk about, you know, how United set up. So we've got the SofaScore graphic here. They've said it's 4-2-3-1. United didn't set up in the 4-2-3-1. What I want to pick out is the selection. So, you know, I was really surprised to see Luke Shaw start, but I also wasn't, because Martinez does look a little bit short match fitness. I don't think he was particularly great against Charlton midweek, but, you know, I think what was interesting, though, is that Ten Hag stuck with Luke Shaw, who I think has been absolutely sensational at centre-back. So calm, and he's up against physically the toughest striker in the league, you know, Erling Haaland, who scored a ridiculous amount of goals, and he kept him quiet. We saw Malacia start on the left as well, who's had a really good run of games since the World Cup. Fred and Casemiro in midfield. I was really surprised to see Christian Eriksen start. I thought it would be Fred instead of Eriksen, and Bruno would play centrally. Antony on that right-hand side, because I feel like when Antony does play, you know, he does provide more balance, you know, he naturally on that right-hand side. But obviously we saw Ten Hag shift Bruno out to that right-hand side. And then we saw Martial up top. And then going into City side as well, I think the key thing here was no John Stones in terms of their build-up and their progression from defence. We saw Akanji with Ake. And, you know, then the team was pretty straightforward from City's perspective. Midfielder Bernardo, Rodri and Kevin De Bruyne, very, very strong. Then Mahrez, Haaland and Foden up top. So when you saw the side, what were your initial thoughts? Because did you share my sort of thoughts as well? Or could you see what Ten Hag was doing pre-kickoff?
No, I could see it, and I thought this, he kind of did exactly what we thought he would do. You know, we obviously, I did the Promised Land preview before the game, and we talked about selection. And the only thing that I kind of like didn't predict in all of this and looking at it was the Luke Shaw element, because we felt Martinez would come back in if his fitness was there, but obviously the fitness isn't quite there yet. So he's sticking with Luke Shaw, a left-footed defender playing to the left side of the central areas. So I don't think that's too much of a shock. I thought Eriksen would start, because Eriksen and Casemiro always start. They don't. There's never really been a position where they've been dropped out because of form or anything like that, maybe to rest players at times. But I thought the extra wheel would be Fred, just because Fred gives you energy in there. It's either him or McTominay, isn't it? And it's now about whether United go forward into the future with versions in their head of 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1. So obviously here they've put it up as a 4-2-3-1. And there were times when the shape was there. But why do we not want to use the term 4-2-3-1? Because I think United fans identify that system with Ole. That system, double pivot, rigid, three players behind a striker alone on their own, not linking up the play, stretched out too far, compact at the back. Not really what they're doing. So it's all on here. It might look like that. And it was at times when on the screen, I think on televisions, it would have very much looked like a 4-2-3-1. But really, Eriksen's function in this is the key. So if we kind of flip forward, we'll talk a little bit about, more about Man City as we go forward. So there's no doubt this manager, he's played 4-2-3-1 at Ajax, but he likes 4-3-3. And I think that all the best teams in the Premier League play versions of 4-3-3. So this is kind of how United set up. Obviously, Shaw there in the middle on the left side, being left-footed, allowing Malacia to go forward. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who is like, you know, the emancipation of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, you know, taking a player who is like dead and finished at a football club and giving him the freedom to perform. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, absolute forward. I would put him ahead of Dalot at the moment. Controversial statement, but we won't go there yet. We won't go there. But those three midfielders, it was really about Casemiro and Fred not playing as a double pivot old school. They were man-marking people. That's what they were doing. And you can see where Eriksen is there, kind of in the middle. Eriksen's job was to go and join the attack. So it's the first time we've seen, maybe since the very start of the season, where Eriksen is kind of your floating eight pushing into the 10. Yeah, that's kind of what he was doing. So that's the basic setup. If we flip to the next slide, Haydar, this is more about position. So what were United really doing in the game? Why were they setting up like this? What were they doing? And how did it stifle City? Because for the first 45 minutes, United dominated the game. Absolutely dominated it. Possessionally, with all the chances. But how did they actually do it? So I kind of mocked this up just to kind of show you guys so you can see what I'm talking about. So you had Varane, Shaw sitting very deep. Really, Haaland was kind of between them for a lot of the game. But what happened? Because this shape was working so well, Haaland ends up becoming like a false nine. And he was like, not in the midfield. He's almost like defensive midfield at times. It was like, this is strange. It surely isn't what Guardiola wants to do with Haaland. He doesn't do it very well. But looking at the shape here, you had Wan-Bissaka and Malacia holding the width. Why? Because that's what City were trying to do. You had Foden on the left, literally standing behind Wan-Bissaka saying, no, mate, you got to look after me. And Wan-Bissaka, you could see, was being told nonstop by the manager from the touchline in front of us, going, go that way, pull him forward. And Foden was lost. Foden's effectiveness in the game was gone. So you had Casemiro and Fred there doing the man marking. But then you had Martial. Now, during the game, there was a lot of discourse about Martial. Fans around me saying, he's had a bad game. He's had a bad game. Get him off. Get him off. We know he's got an injury. We know he did go off, obviously,
you could see him playing with an injury, Rob. I felt like... But the other thing as well is that if people are saying this to me as well, you know, the players are being lazy. He's not running. He's not sprinting. Pressing isn't about sprinting to your man. No. It's about covering the spaces and the zones and cutting out the passing lane. So that's something that we should maybe go into with Martial.
So that's why I've kind of put it up here on this slide to show you, because really Martial was almost like a what we'd call like a single pivot people can attack around. So the key was definitely Eriksen here. Eriksen was told nonstop to run beyond Martial to kind of be the first point of the press and allow Martial to either get an interception or to kind of be in that area. So stand still, Martial. Sometimes standing still is exactly what you need to do in the press because you need to close down lanes. So Martial was doing that in the first half. What he wasn't doing was that when he was on the ball, he wasn't particularly good because he's injured. So that's the problem. So that's why he came off at half time. But then what you did see as a key from, say, 45 minutes to, say, 60 or when City scored their goal, United were a mess because they didn't have that striker doing that. So Anthony came on and tried to do it for about 10 minutes. Then he went wide. Then you saw Bruno do it for a little bit. Then you had Rashford do it for a little bit. They tried to change it around. But in that 15 minutes, City killed United. And that's because this shape that you can see now, and we put this up here to kind of show what United tried to do from the off, from minute one, completely disappeared. And they had to work it out on the fly. And Ten Hag, to his credit, made his substitutes, but he found the way back into the game. So even at 1-0, Haydar, and my son was with me next to me in the stands, I was saying to him, at 1-0, I was like, we can still get something out of this game.
Yeah, there's a goal in this, for sure.
We're taking control again. Like, we're getting our positioning back. And you could see for 10 minutes, it was a mess. And it was like, well, who's the striker? Why are they not pressing effectively? What's Rashford doing? Is Rashford injured? Is Bruno left? Is he right? Is he centre? We all got very messy again. But as soon as they got this back, the game turned again on a dime. And City couldn't cope with it. For the whole game, for I would say at least, I don't know, 65, 70 minutes of the game, Guardiola didn't really have an answer for any of this. And that's because his players are not in a good moment. They're not running. They're not willing. They're not able. And they're just probably not as good. Like when you've got an Akanji and Ake at the back, it's very different to a Laporta and Diaz, isn't it? It is different. So it's a different set of circumstances, different players. But the good thing was that Man United took this whole game, played their style of football, because they have played a 4-1-5 almost every week. And this really was like a 4-2-4. So you just had one less in the press, but Fred was allowed to kind of, if he wasn't stuck to someone man-marking, he was allowed to roam a little bit. But his idea there was in that game was to stick to De Bruyne on that side, literally this close to De Bruyne. And if Foden came inside or later on Grealish, Casemiro was sticking that close to them. That's discipline. That's tactics. That's practicing it on the training ground. All credit to Manchester United. All credit to the players. They've got now someone behind the scenes actually conducting the band. And what does that mean? It means they're getting a tune out of this football team.
Massively, Rob. What I want to talk about, so I agree with all that, but what really impressed me about Ten Hag was the defensive tactics. You know, in the first half in particular, United stopped City playing through the middle. Mm. I think what was interesting was that because Bruno and Rashford tucked in, they were more narrow. What that made City do was it made them go down the flanks. And we saw Cancelo have so much acres of space.
Mm.
They weren't really, there was much less inversion from City, but that didn't hurt United. They had acres of space, but they were quite ineffectual. We know that De Bruyne, as you mentioned, De Bruyne and Silva were playing higher up. They're in the half spaces. Fred and Casemiro, man-to-man, as you mentioned. But what I liked was, so let's say Akanji had the ball.
Mm.
Martial would go to him, and depending which, you know, depending whether it was Bruno or Rashford, they would then go and press or come narrow, and that stops City from playing out the back. So because United basically were able to lock off that centre of the pitch, City would go back, they're ineffectual, and that allowed United then to either win the ball back quickly and counter, or it forced them out wide, and they didn't do particularly much with it. So I thought that was really, really smart, and, you know, as Vincent's saying here, Ten Hag packing the midfield. Casemiro and Fred are fantastic. Fred, can we talk about Fred a little bit here? Because we can go on and on about Casemiro. I mean, he is absolutely sensational, Rob. I know you might have had your doubts in terms of the fee and the money spending on a player who's close to 30, but he is utterly world-class, what United have been missing for years and years. But Fred as well. So we saw Fred under Oli as a player that was playing deeper and, you know, he's very rigid in a double pivot with McTominay. Was asked to do things that he's not good at, but what he's fantastic at is the pressing, winning the ball back, feeding it to, let's say, an Eriksen or Casemiro who've got a better range of passing. And he's emerged as a player that Ten Hag can now rely on in a big game. And I just thought that it was so smart for Casemiro, for Ten Hag to have Casemiro and Fred on those two dangerous players in Silva and Kevin De Bruyne, because what it did is it just completely locked them out of the game in that first half. And then when United did win the ball, as you mentioned, Eriksen's at floating eight. The amount of times Eriksen picked up the ball and had space to then either feed Rashford into that space that was vacated by Walker, because Walker would go up and, you know, Rashford had a couple of chances, didn't he, in running in behind. I just thought it was so smart because United aren't at the level of Manchester City right now. Let's just be honest, in terms of on the ball in possession, they're not at that level, but they were so good off the ball and their counter-pressing was fantastic that when they did win the ball back, they had the better chances. So I thought it was, defensively, United were sensational, especially in that first half. As you mentioned, Martial going off, that made it a bit more difficult. But I thought Fred was so key. As Casemiro will always get the plus, but I thought Fred was unbelievable in stopping De Bruyne in that first half.
Yeah, look, this it's the team function, isn't it? About what's everyone's individual jobs, and then how does the shape manifest itself and help you win the football match? You know, this shape isn't at all defensive. It isn't. What it is, it's about winning the ball back in the right areas and stopping the opponent from doing what they want to do, from them being kind of like the alpha males of the football pitch and you being kind of subservient to their wants and needs. No, no, no. What Man United were doing here was being aggressive. So, of course, that's where Fred is useful, you know, and even I think in weeks and months to come, that's where someone like McTominay will be useful. They can all play the aggression game. And Ole, let's be honest, that's kind of what Ole wanted to do in those areas, be aggressive. But what was the difference is that United would sit a lot deeper, a lot flatter. You know, it would be like that. It'd be like kind of like 6-4, like 6-0-4 at times, like United not playing with any midfielders, not having any creativity in the middle. That's not what this is. So Fred played really well. I actually think Casemiro for the first hour of the game wasn't great. You know, he gave the ball away now and then, and he wasn't as assured as he has been. But his job, definitely yesterday, was to go follow players, go follow the markers. So whoever was in there, generally Cancelo in that little gap, Foden was very wide. City still inverted. You still saw that Cancelo went in the middle. De Bruyne tried to go central at times when he was wide. No real difference in Pep's tactics. The difference is how they found the space or didn't find the space. The problem was that Man United were closing those spaces. So this kind of shape here doesn't show that the whole game, when the ball came out from Edison to a defender, was that Man United outnumbered them 4-3 every time. Kanji, as you said, Walker, and well, I've forgotten his name suddenly.
Okay.
So the three players, and they were playing together from the back against four, against Bruno, Eriksen, Martial, Rashford. It doesn't take rocket science to know that you're outnumbered, does it? Now, when Man City are at the very best, no problem. They'll play out. They'll get through you. But they're not in their best moment. But you did see for 15 minutes how that just crumbled without Martial. So Martial was not great on the ball and was injured and obviously left. And that was a key point in the game, because that could have, you could have lost the game at that point. That's where United in the past would have just crumbled. You'd have lost 3-0 and you'd gone, oh, I played well for half an hour, an hour. But that's not good enough, is it? It's not what we need to see. But you're seeing better things now. So that key tactic there was something Guardiola couldn't get over, because the ball into the midfield wasn't on. And the midfielders, I think he said actually at the end of the game as well, he went, well, my players are not doing the things I want them to do. It's like, really, Pep? Well, why don't you make them? You know, you got quite a good squad. So there's a problem there. I don't know what it is, but I talked about it last week and the previous weeks. Something is going on at Manchester City. We don't know what it is. It might just be a little bit of bad form, but they've lost motivation. They've lost maybe the impetus to keep their shape so rigid, to be able to play fluidly.
Can I make a comment, Rob?
Yeah, of course.
I've seen a lot of people actually mention this, but I think I think that there's no doubting Erling Haaland is an absolute goal machine. I thought City were better last season playing a false nine with Foden. I think that they look one-dimensional. He hardly gets involved in the build-up. It's almost like they're playing with 10 men. Obviously, you give him a chance, he's going to score. It very much reminds me of United when they had Ruud van Nistelrooy, who is my favourite Man United striker pretty much of all time. Mm-hmm. I grew up watching him. But United became a better side when Fergie sold Ruud, who scored so many goals, distributed the goals to Ronaldo and Rooney. They emerged. And then United went to win three Premier Leagues in a row, Champions Leagues. So when I look at the City side, I think it was around 48% of the goals have come through Erling Haaland. So if Haaland doesn't score, City don't win as many games. So, and then on the motivation point, let's be honest, Man City have been playing at such an incredible level for the last 5 years. You're bound to have a season or two where you sort of drop maybe in performance, in motivation. And I would argue that, you know, maybe Pep does need to now have another rebuild, mini rebuild, get rid of some of the players that have been fantastic for them, bring in younger players or different players with a bit more hunger who are happy to buy in. Because you can get a bit stale, even if you are Pep Guardiola or Sir Alex Ferguson. That's why Fergie was the master, isn't he? Every 4 years or so, he'd rotate and refresh the squad and he'll build another sort of dynasty. So I think all of these things are sort of playing into the reason why City aren't as good. They're still a fantastic side, but I see them more one-dimensional this year. And I went into this game thinking United can win this game, and it hasn't been like that for years.
Yeah, totally. And I think if you look at the numbers now, like Manchester City are 1 point ahead of United in the league. But had United started the season anything like decently, they'd probably be about 10 points clear of City, wouldn't they? You know, like they are 10 points clear of Liverpool. So, again, this kind of horses for courses. And like you just said there, will rebuild now be triggered? I'm sure it will be at some point at City. You know, I think they've got a good structure both behind the scenes. They've got good young players, the likes of Palmer, Rico Lewis. They've got players who can come in and maybe freshen things up. But having that elite quality, it's the same as Liverpool losing Mane. How do you replace a Mane? Someone who's won you a Champions League, won you a Premier League. Yeah, go get Gakpo. Yeah, go and get Darwin Nunez. Are they as good? No, they're not. So you've got to find a way, haven't you? And it's a little bit like United now. You know, can you go and buy someone better than Martial? Yeah, of course you can. There's going to be players out there in the future. But as you stand today, who is your best striker to do that function? Is it Martial or is it Rashford or is it Ronaldo? Well, the one right at the end, of course, is Ronaldo, and he cannot do this. So this is why I think United were compromised for 6 months with Cristiano. It's not Cristiano's fault. We don't want to bang on about him. He's the past. He's come. He's gone. He's in Saudi. Good luck to him in his future career and all that money. But he couldn't help United in this kind of game in the same way that Haaland can't help City if they're going to play like this. And the problem is that what's different at Man City? Well, the difference is Gabriel Jesus. You haven't got Gabriel Jesus as your option to play false positions. So you've got Haaland playing a false position now. And when he was running back, Haydon, we were watching him go across us, back towards the defensive midfielder role, towards his own goal.
Just to get a touch on the ball, yeah.
We were like, job done. He's 50 yards from goal now. He's 100 yards from goal. Great. That's what you want. You don't want to see him anywhere near David De Gea. And I think that's where Shaw played the game perfectly, because Varane was able to step out and go and mark Haaland when he had to. But Haaland is not a pivot. He doesn't get the ball and move it. It's not 1-1-1. It's not like what you'd see with Jesus, where it would all be one-touch football in there, or Foden as a false. They don't do that, not with Haaland. Haaland's not really good at it as well. You see, when the ball goes to him, he can't really hold it up in the Premier League. It's not what he's good at. Number nines don't hold the ball up anymore. I keep saying this in other shows. They don't do it. You need someone that allows kind of the world to revolve around them. And I think that's where Martial did a really good job in the first half, even though he wasn't really on it on the ball. So we'll talk about Weghorst later, because it's not in this segment now. But Weghorst is exactly why you've gone and got a striker like Weghorst, someone who will allow the press to happen. He will go and trigger presses at times, but he will also link play up. You look at his stats, he's absolute worldy in terms of laying the ball off and getting those quick assists for runners. He'll let players do their thing around him. He won't hog space and he won't try and hog the ball. He'll move it quickly. And you can only say with Ten Hag, that's exactly what he's trying to do. You're seeing it in games, and I'm sure that's exactly what he'll be trying to do now for the rest of the season.
Well, he's also a pressing demon. You've seen the statistics that Sky Sports have released. I mean, he was a top pressing I believe player, not forward,
yeah,
in the whole of the Premier League when he was here in his brief spell in the Premier League with Burnley. So I'm really excited about that signing. We'll talk about it in more detail later. Rob, let's talk about the Grealish goal, because City's right-hand side is where they gathered a lot of momentum, and they made it difficult for United in that 20 minutes after half-time where they were in the ascendancy. So what I saw is that, you know, Rodri was getting on the ball more. He was affecting the play in the build-up. You had Mahrez, Walker and KDB. So what I think they did very well in that second half is they had that triangle. So let's say Malassi would come to Mahrez, then you'd have Fred go to Walker, and then KDB made that run. And as soon as he gets into that box, that third man run, and plays the ball in, Jack Grealish scored. And that had been coming, hadn't it? And I think a lot of that, in my opinion, and some people are going to be surprised about this, but the fact is United weren't defending from the top as well off the ball. And then we saw that with Martial coming off. Martial's got his issues in terms of, I've been disappointed in his finishing the last three, four games that we've seen. And I'm also, you know, a little bit disappointed in terms of him on the ball, but actually off the ball, I think he's been really, really good. And that's why City were able to then build up from the back. So that's how I sort of saw it. But then when we saw that Marcus went centrally, United started to get into the game a bit more. And I actually quite like Marcus centrally. And I'm interested to see what Ten Hag is going to do, because Garnacho is playing his way into contention now. He's so direct. And we saw that for the goal. We'll talk about United's goals in a moment. But from a defensive point of view, United got worse because of the fact that, you know, they weren't stopping City in the build-up from the back.
Absolutely. And I think they were the kind of two turning points in the game in terms of, like, timestamps. So when Martial went off, United took a good 15, 20 minutes to work it all out again. It was messy. It was a kind of all over the shop. Antony, we watched him at halftime, spent the whole of halftime sprinting, warming up, running. We were like, well, maybe he's going to come on as a striker, or is Rashford injured? Because we thought at that point, Marcus might go off. Antony came on as a number nine. It just did not work. It was a mess. You actually saw Ten Hag in the technical area absolutely going after Antony non-stop, saying, hold that position. Don't run around. Stay there. Let Eriksen move beyond you. But, of course, Antony is a mover, isn't he? Antony's a player who wants the ball to feet and dribble and move and get into channels and maybe get into areas in one-on-one. That's not really what Martial's function was. So that was a bit of a problem. That's when City started to take control. But as soon as... Yeah, they kind of worked it out in terms of Garnacho's inclusion. When Garnacho came on the pitch, Garnacho allowed that front four to kind of be that first wave of press of defending again. Just in shape, not anything crazy. Like, we talk about pressing. Everyone always thinks we think about running loads and just being, like, you know, frantic. No, shape. Shape comes first. So Garnacho, of course, being more naturally left-sided, isn't he? Plays that role really well. Rashford can go central. Then what happened? Antony went kind of wider areas. Bruno tucked in a little bit more. So it was a little bit more of what we'd seen in the first half. And they just kind of let it play out a little bit more. As soon as they did that, City just completely lost their verve again. So they had 20 minutes of domination. And I think that's literally all they had the whole game. They didn't have much more of it. They had more possession. Possession means nothing if you do nothing with it. That's the way it is. So Man United didn't play pure transition like under Ole, which is what they'd have done before. Counter-attack, you know, bang, bang, 1-2, goal. No, it wasn't that. It was actually a really, really defined shape. Not a mid-block. I don't want to call it that. But it was that front four that was all vital in both keeping the ball away from our defenders and from away from De Gea, but also giving you opportunities to score. If Man United had their shooting boots on yesterday, it would have been 5-1. It would have been. They had opportunities in the first half. Good opportunities, strong opportunities. The XG at the end of the game was Man United had an XG of 2.17 and City's was under 1. So 2-1 is the result. And it showed that. And that XG could have been higher. They could have ended up being 3-1 or something like that, which would have meant probably would have scored more goals. So overall, a fantastic set of tactics from Ten Hag. But this is kind of, I think, the progression and also the evolution of taking a squad that had no confidence only 6 months ago and now turn them into, say, a Champions League contending team.
Well, you know, Rob, United had one shot on... City had one shot on target, lowest they've had all season. So United really did deserve the win. We will talk about Bruno's goal in a second. But what I do want to say is what was smart we saw in the first half is that... Let's say Walker was high up. United win the ball back in midfield and win it back quickly. Mm. They would, let's say, feed Eriksen. Maybe Eriksen would give it to Bruno. You know the chance that Rashford had where he was through on goal and he missed touch and Edison blocked it.
Yeah.
What was great about that is Martial came to many times would come towards the ball and he would be an option. Then what he would do is he'd maybe lay it off to Bruno. Bruno would be coming more centrally. And Bruno, who's a great playmaker, would play that ball into Rashford. So instead of, let's say, going straight to Rashford, Bruno going straight to Rashford, and then maybe there's a risk of the ball getting cut out or Kanji able to come across. Because Martial was coming deeper to pick up the ball and, let's say, to play it to Bruno, that was drawing in the centre-backs and there was space in behind. So while Walker was up and vacating the space, we saw Kanji come in and try to maybe take the ball off Martial. So that was so smart. And actually, Bruno on that right-hand side did work because he came much more centrally, tucked in. He wasn't playing traditionally out wide. And Rashford has that out ball. So I thought that was fantastic. And actually, when we talk about Rashford's goal, Rashford does drop deep, doesn't he? Garnacho makes that run into the vacated space by Walker. And then United obviously get the goal. But we'll talk about that in due course. Here are some of the statistics. Again, as we mentioned, United 8 shots to City's 5. City were really ineffectual and United were dominant. Let's talk about that Bruno Fernandes goal. I'm going to let you run through this as well, because you had a great vision, didn't you, from where you're sitting in Old Trafford. So talk about, you know, sort of what you saw. What was the reaction of the fans as well and why the goal should stand?
Well, Where do I sit? So if you look where Bruno is in this still. So there's kind of, we've got two stills for you to show you exactly why it's onside, why it's onside every day in a week. And people are moaning because they want to moan about it. That's really all it comes down to. If you look at the rule book, you look at the interpretation over the last, say, 3 or 4 years, not recently, like over a period of time, this is the interpretation. This is how it's done. This is why VAR had no problem with it. So I kind of sit where level where Bruno is now. So when Marcus made the run, you could see he was 3 or 4 yards offside. Really easy. He's right along my sight of line, line of sight. And when he made the run, literally everyone around me screamed, "Leave it, Marcus." Now, you won't hear that obviously on the TV, but I'm telling you, the whole block of where I was sat screamed that at that moment. And Marcus runs towards the ball, obviously sprints, and this is what this still is here, isn't it? So Marcus reaching the ball. What are the key points here in this first phase of play? Well, I would say there's 3 points here. Goalkeeper's position, Marcus's position, and Akanji's position behind him. So Akanji is behind Marcus, but Akanji is not running through Marcus. Marcus is not obstructing Akanji. Akanji knows where the ball is because he's going backwards because he's seen where the ball's being played. So it's not on obstructing his sight of line, you know, a line of sight again, sorry. And you look at the goalkeeper, he's on the penalty spot. He's got a clear line of where the ball is. So he's not really diverting. And he might be thinking Marcus is going to shoot the ball, of course. But Marcus does not become active until he either touches the ball or until he impedes a player or obstructs the play or influences the play. It's how it's written down, and this is how the law is interpreted by all officials, not just in the Premier League, but it's supposed to be across the world. This is how it is. So if we flip to the next one, because I think this is the key still. So Marcus is completely pulled up. Yeah. Akanji's past Marcus, isn't he? The defender on the left-hand side there, is that Walker, isn't it, coming back across, has come across. Marcus has not affected any of them in any way, shape or form. And Bruno's running a straight line. So Bruno is onside. So, of course, Bruno can do whatever he wants, can't he? He can shoot the ball. The goalkeeper, vitally, is maybe a step or two forward of where he was, but really hasn't changed. So it's not like Edison came out 20 yards to meet someone because he thinks someone's onside, offside further up the pitch. Not at all. This is a clean goal, and it's so clean. So when Bruno scored it, we all immediately went, well, that's a goal because he's onside. Marcus didn't touch the ball. And that was in real time, Haydel, without replays. And we all said it. Now, people might say, oh, well, you're a United fan, you're biased. As an analyst, I always think like that in the moment. I think I'd like it to be a goal, but I've got to think logically, was it a goal? And straight away, my brain went, well, yeah, it was a goal. Of course it is, because Marcus has pulled up. And you could see him pull up, see him put the brakes on, slow down. And that means he's not active. So people can go on to like a match of the day last night. We talked about this off camera. You know, Gary Lineker, Ian Wright, Micah Richards, obviously huge blue himself, all said, well, of course he's influencing play. Not according to the law, not the way the law is written and not the way that the law is interpreted. It hasn't been like that for a long time. This was offside 10, 15 years ago, Haydar. Yeah, easy decision because no VAR. Linesman puts his flag up, he's offside. That's the end of the play. But that's not been like that for a long, long time. People need to get real and understand the modern game of the rules. But this is not happening from 2 weeks ago. This is like 3 or 4 years in the pipelines of what offside means. You give the advantage to the attacking team. That is kind of the ethos of all of this. What should Manchester City have done here better, Haydar? Maybe Akanji could have busted a gut to get to Bruno rather than jog around that part to the end. Maybe you could have seen Walker throw his body across the line there rather than just put his leg out. Maybe Edison could have gone backwards to close the space down a little bit. That's their problem, isn't it? Not Man United's. So it's a goal. It's a clean goal. And I don't, really, the people moaning about it, it's always like either but or. It's not. There's nothing factual in what they're saying. It's just opinions of what they think the game should be rather than what the game is.
Very, very well explained. Actually, looking at this graphic now like this, you can kind of see Akanji has, you know, he has actually come across, hasn't he?
So he's got a clear line of that run. Yeah. He hasn't deviated. He hasn't gone round Rashford and gone, way. It's a clear line back
like
to the ball.
Like if you look from here to here, yeah, you do see. Okay, look.
Marcus has gone in a bit, you see, tucked in and actually deliberately got himself out of the plate. And you see he kind of pulls up. And when the goal went in, he turned to the lines straight away and did this and went, I'm not involved. And the flag was already up. but he clearly is not involved. So it's a goal.
By the letter of the law, it's a goal. If that goal was scored against United, you'd be pissed off. Come on.
I wouldn't be. No, I honestly would. We had this conversation and we went out the ground and we talked a lot about it. And I get this in the neck all the time, because when I go against United in these moments, people always go, oh, you know, you're too moderate. You're a hater and all of this. You've just got to play it as you see. You've got to think what officials think. You know, that's all I care about. If this had been the other end, and we've seen Man City score goals like this over many years, there's one of Bernardo Silva circulating on social media today, where he comes from an offside position of about 6 yards offside, comes back into play, is onside, gets the ball, 1-2, scores. But he was offside at the start of the play. But it's a goal because you give the advantage. So not at all. I wouldn't have been upset about it. I'd have been more upset with my defenders saying, well, why did you not deal with that? That's what I thought about Kanji at that moment. I thought, well, do your job. Get to the ball. And I think that maybe is the difference between like old Man United, who would never get to the ball, would they, Haydar? They'd always be a yard off Maguire, Lindelof. They'd always be a yard off where you want them to be. Whereas the centre-backs now are getting to their marks, but it's not happening at Man City. This would have been very different if that was Laporta, I think. If that was Laporta there or Diaz, I think they would have been able to block that shot and get in the line of sight. But these two didn't do it. That's on them. That's on Peps, not on Man United.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's a goal. But Rob, what we're going to quickly talk about before we talk about Rashford's goals, I do want to pick up on Wan-Bissaka. A lot of people in the comments are mentioning why we're not talking about Wan-Bissaka. Don't worry, guys. We are going to talk about him right now because he has been... Well, I'm just so shocked, Rob, to be honest, in the turnaround. I really am. I thought his career was over. He might still leave Man United. I know that Wolves are interested. There are other clubs interested in him. You know, but the way I'm looking at it right now, I don't think you really need to change anything. I think him and Dalot, as it stands to the end of the season, are options that United can deal with. We've seen today, yesterday, in fact, obviously we're recording this the day after the game, is that how much has his defensive awareness improved? Maybe for the goal, there was a comment here from Cohen saying, could he have been better at the back post, his awareness? But actually, I thought Wan-Bissaka understands his role. He obviously trusts Varane on the inside. Varane is just constantly barking, you know, organizing. He is that leader in defense, and Ten Hag has said this many, many times. But even on the ball, you know, Wan-Bissaka in possession, he jinked around two or three players. He looks much more comfortable on the ball. He's been very good in the build-up. Defensively, he's been very, very strong as well. He is getting into the final third, and he's putting in crosses, and he's impacting. And not just under Oli when the ball went to him, just almost like stopping the play, maybe looking inside. He's doing things in the final third. He looks more confident. I think it's absolutely incredible, his turnaround. And now Dalot has got someone who's going to challenge him for that role. So massive, massive credit to Ten Hag, but also massive credit to Wan-Bissaka, because his career looked almost gone at United. I don't know what's going to happen. He might still leave. He maybe isn't going forward if United want to win titles. The ideal profile for Ten Hag at right back. But well done to the lad. He deserves all the praise. And, you know, he's given Ten Hag another selection headache.
Incredible, like, kudos to Aaron Wan-Bissaka, because, as I said, he was a dead footballer not so long ago in terms of his career at United. And he's done that and resurrected it through his own means, through working with this manager and being good. There's just one comment that I want to pick up on, saying just at the end of that section that Rashford was shielding the ball. He wasn't shielding the ball. Like, it didn't look to us that it was shielding it. It didn't look like that on the replay. If he shields the ball, he's got to go across it. He's got to go across and shield it and stand square to it and shield that there to allow Bruno to come in. That's not what happened. That's not reality. That's not how VAR saw it. That's not how we saw it in real time. Anyway, I'll leave that there and go on to Aaron. So I think with Wan-Bissaka, I was saying this kind of short period of time that he's been back in the team and obviously playing minutes. I think his performances for the role of what he's supposed to do in this team are better than Dalot's. So Dalot's played really well and Dalot's done his job. And obviously before the World Cup, you know, people again saying, is Dalot the best right back in the world? And you get all these grand statements, don't you? Dalot goes to the World Cup, plays well, obviously gets an injury and has come back and still carrying that. But I look at Wan-Bissaka, and a player that I think you'd have been quite happy to go out on loan only a few weeks ago. Actually, I think he's essential. I think you need to keep him. So I think when you're talking about the goal there, all the credit has to really go to De Bruyne on the goal. Because De Bruyne gets in behind or takes on Varane, takes that space over. And actually the pass, it looks like just a clip, but he actually knows where Grealish is. He spots Grealish, and Grealish has a kind of clear run. Now, Wan-Bissaka can't do anything about that. It just happens. It's so quick, isn't it? So there were times, weren't there, Haydar? Again, last season, we would talk about it a lot. What were the problems with Wan-Bissaka and Lindelof? And that is that space between centre-back and right-back was just miles too big. They never closed it. It was always a mess. How many goals getting done at the back post? And that's why Dalot wasn't viable, because Dalot was bad at that as well, wasn't he? But I don't think we're seeing that anymore. I don't think, you know, if someone scores a goal like that, I think you have to give them credit because they open you up in that moment. I think Aaron Wan-Bissaka, both front foot and back foot, is massively improved. And you saw at times where he was getting the ball from Varane before, he would have panicked and gone sideways. And he wasn't doing that. He was either looking down the line to Anthony, looking inside towards the forward, to Martial in the first half, and then obviously Rashford, or he was switching play. And also, he wasn't taking risks. And that's what I loved. So he was thinking with his brain. He was going, I know exactly what I'm going to do. If I can't do this, I go back to the player here, give it back to Varane, and we recycle. Now, that's not been happening at Man United ever, in my memory. It really hasn't. And that's all about coaching. So Wan-Bissaka, for me, I'd have him as a starter now. And if Dalot comes back, obviously, back from his injury, I'd say to Dalot, right, you've got to work your way back in the team. Exactly the same thing that they're doing with Martinez. We love Martinez, don't we? You got to go prove it. Prove it on the training pitch, and then you can play. It's exactly why Maguire and Lindelof are not playing, because I don't think they can prove it. Even if they try hard, I don't really think they've got the tools to do it. I think Aaron Wan-Bissaka has got the tools to play right back for Man United.
I completely agree with that. And I think it's spot on about Maguire in particular, and Lindelof.
And we've murdered Wan-Bissaka on this show. Like, we've murdered him. We've done whole shows on him and about why his position is so bad. So this is from two people here that absolutely, like, feel they understand what his problems were, like, 6 months ago.
Yeah, last year we were doing shows on him.
Proof is in the pudding, and it's there. And I think he was really, really good in the derby. I really think it was that bit later on in the game, wasn't it? You know, where he's up the top end of the pitch and he just steps inside, 2-3 touches, kills 3 players in one moment. You think, bad players can't do that. Good players can do that. So he must be good somewhere in him. And he's showing that now, actually on the football pitch. I think Ten Hag must be delighted.
Absolutely. Where I will disagree with you is that I would still be starting Dalot over Wan-Bissaka, just because what he can give you in the build-up. I think when you look at the underlying numbers as well, Rob, I think he's getting into the box more than Luke Shaw is. He's more threatening. I think his expected assists are more than Luke Shaw. And we talk about Luke Shaw as being one of the best left-backs currently on form, maybe even centre-backs at the minute, in the league. I think Dalot is more progressive than Wan-Bissaka, and I think we've missed out on that right-hand side. For right now, I'd be starting Dalot. But it's a great problem to have for Ten Hag. He can now rotate, because Dalot does pick up injuries. So, no, he could now be like, okay, well, maybe this is a game that I don't have to play Dalot every single week. So we have had a few issues where, right, if Dalot's not going to play, who's playing at that right-back position? So,
that's the choice. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and Malacia has been absolutely fantastic. I love the lad. I think he's great, and he's really aggressive. And I think he's fantastic. He's still young, Rob. It's his first season.
He's young,
and
yeah.
He's not as good as Luke Shaw. But how many players are as good as Luke Shaw right now at the minute? What I will say is, let's talk about Luke Shaw, because you know we've got to talk about Rashford's goal as well. What I'll say about Luke Shaw is, I mean, he's proving himself to be such a huge asset for this Man United side.
Hmm.
What I really like about him, and what I like about the selection of him at centre back, and I was thinking this, is that what Martinez offers to this United side is unique in terms of he's the only left-footed centre-back. We talk about why do managers like Ten Hag, like Arteta, like Pep, why do they like left-footed centre-backs playing on the left-hand side? It's those passing lanes. It's the ability to, you know, play through the lines. What United lack when Martinez doesn't play is progression in the build-up. And Luke Shaw has that in abundance. What I've also liked about Luke Shaw, though, is he puts himself about a little bit, you know, physically. He's not easily bullied. I've seen that this season more than I've ever seen from him. The question is, can he sustain that for longer than the season? We've seen Luke Shaw play at such a high level on Ollie and then be absolutely terrible the season after. So I think right now he's probably one of the first names on United's team sheet, whether that's at left back or that's at centre back. I still want to see him at left back. We saw him at left back, you know, that fantastic pass that he did. I can't remember who we were playing. Was it Bournemouth, where he played it to Bruno and then he played it across to Marcus? And also he scored that goal as well. Did well for my FPL points. You know, I just think Luke Shaw has been outstanding, whether he's asked to play at centre-back or left-back. And also you hear from Ten Hag saying that, you know, Shaw put his hand up to play centre back, you know, when he had a little bit of an issue there. And that's what you want to see from the squad, you know, the willingness to say, you know what, I'll play out of position because I'll play for my manager, I'll play for my team. And he's outstanding at that. And he should be starting instead of Maguire at centre back, in my opinion. I feel more comfortable when he plays. Martinez will come back in, no doubt. Mlesi will drop out. United will look better going forward with Luke Shaw at left back. But it's great options to have. And there was no need to rush Martinez back in. He's just won the World Cup. So I think it's fantastic. And as Cohen's saying here, there's so many of you in the chat. Thank you so much, guys, for the support. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, share this with all your friends. The Masterclass is back.
Yeah, I think the thing is with Luke Shaw is that in an ideal world where everyone is fit and everyone's ready, Luke Shaw plays left back. Luke Shaw is a far superior left back to Mlesi. I think Mlesi has got full of endeavour, and yet, like you said, he's young and people love the way he plays. It kind of reminds you of Wan-Bissaka in year one. That Wan-Bissaka is, you know, he's very raw. He's got, you know, definitely great traits that fans love, and like being in a stadium when they would do a moment. But this is everything. So it's how you play with your brain. And I think Mlesi is not quite there yet, but that's because he is young. So I'd rather Luke Shaw played there because it's such a vital role playing that kind of left wing back, right wing back role. It's like massive in terms of how your shape is. And Martinez will undoubtedly be the starter. You said something there about ball progression. I think the reason why Luke Shaw is the deputy for Martinez is for two reasons. Is because he does progress the ball like Martinez. They are both ball progressors. They both will move the ball forward in a stylistic way, the way the manager's telling them to play. But as you said, the other side of it is left-footed. So that's in that profile-wise, there might be different positions, but they're actually similar players, similar stature, you know, not the tallest, but not the smallest, and they can do stuff. In that kind of game, you need to be able to get the ball from De Gea to Shaw to Mlesi or into either Casemiro or cross to Fred. And you needed to do that consistently. Now, I think Martinez does that fine. So I think that when everyone is fit, Martinez will be back there. But it also says, I see there in the comments there about whether Martinez will get suspended at some point. Yeah, you're right. We now feel that we have coverage. And this is something United do not have the luxury of. I'd be much happier with Luke Shaw playing left-sided centre-back than I would be Maguire or Lindelof. It's just the truth. You know, they're too slow. They're never going to be quicker. They could be coached till they're blue in the face and they will never be quicker. So I think eventually those two players will be moved out of the football club at some point or the other, not necessarily this transfer window. But this is all about philosophy, isn't it? And being able to feed that philosophy. Luke Shaw gives you that in abundance. I'd go back to Aaron Wan-Bissaka just very quickly. The reason why I would start him and keep him starting just for now is that he's the guy in the ascension. So Delo's stats before the World Cup were great. But Delo actually had quite a hard World Cup. He played a lot of minutes and he got injured. So I would be saying to him, go get yourself fit. Like would be to Martinez, take your time. And Aaron, next three or four games, you're the starter and you're going to prove it and say to Delo, you can't have your shirt back because I'm here now. And I would rather we did that than say now just sell Wan-Bissaka because we get 20 million for him or 30 million or put him out on loan to Palace or Wolves or wherever else, whoever teams that want him. A lot of teams are going to want this version of Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I actually think Erik ten Hag would want this version of Aaron Wan-Bissaka. We talk about going buy right backs, don't we, Haydar? Loads. Oh, you've got to go buy right back. Well, you've got one now. You've got another one. So you've got two right backs. So you can forget about that for a few months and maybe go forward and look at other positions because obviously that's still key.
Absolutely. And Dory, you've actually led me into the next topic for the show. And Dory's saying here, Rob, I don't think that Bruno gets the credit he deserves for his involvement in our second goal. That ball to Garnacho took so many players out. So we're actually going to talk about that now. I've just brought this, Rob, back on the screen because although it hasn't got Garnacho on it, it just gives you an idea of United's shape throughout the game. So I think what we spoke about with Martial earlier was that Martial came towards the ball a lot in that first half. So that made him a passing option. What that did is it drew in Akanji and it drew in Ake and it allowed then Rashford on the left-hand side to exploit that space vacated by Walker on that left-hand side. And United did that a lot. So when we came to the goal for Rashford, Rashford did something similar. He came deep, he laid it off then to Bruno and Garnacho made that run, you know, into that space behind. And that's where United really, really exploited City. What I really like about Garnacho, we haven't had a chance to speak to him as much because obviously we haven't had as many shows recently. He's so direct. He plays without fear. He's got great end product. He's offering things that you wanted to see from someone like Jadon Sancho. Jadon Sancho is not the same profile, but you know Sancho was very direct, wasn't he? And I'm really looking forward to seeing Sancho come back. I think you know we're going to see a really, I think Ten Hag's handled that situation really well, a really energized player. So when we looked at Garnacho, first time ball didn't come off, but the way that he was able to show poise and he was able to show calmness in that situation, turned with his left foot and Marcus playing like an instinctive number nine, slotted it in. But it all came from that build-up. Rashford dropping deep, laying it off to Bruno. Bruno with his fantastic ball in behind and exploiting that space that Walker left time and time again during the game. So that was almost a carbon copy of what United were trying to do in the first half. And obviously we saw Rashford score the goal in the end. So United deserved it. It must have been amazing being in that stadium. I'm so jealous of you. And yeah, what an incredible comeback. In the space of 3 or 4 minutes, United scoring 2 goals and beating City.
Yeah, it was a really great goal. As you said, you know, Garnacho for me was a player that changed it back in the direction of United, because he allowed United to do the functional shape that they were trying to do in the first half and were doing it quite successfully then. I think the thing is with Garnacho, like, I'm glad you put the shape back up here, because really all this is it's the same tactics, just with players doing different functions in the tactic. So yeah, let's talk about Bruno. Why did it work so well with Bruno yesterday? Bruno starting the game in a wider position. If it was a 4-2-3-1, Bruno Fernandes would have to be going and playing on a wing position at times, wouldn't he? In the channel, into a wing position. He didn't do that. It's not what he does. It's not what Ten Hag does. So what does that allow you to do? Well, looking at the shape here and looking at these players, if you think Rashford going into the Martial position, Garnacho going into the Rashford position, having Eriksen there until obviously when Eriksen came off and they kind of switched it around a bit, Bruno had freedom to kind of attack the box and get the ball on the deck and play progressive passes. Now, this is why Bruno Fernandes is a better footballer without that bloke we don't like to mention, because we mention him too much, Cristiano Ronaldo. Cristiano Ronaldo does not give him that option, because he won't run, he won't hold this shape. Ronaldo will either come short too much, because that's a bad trait at 36, or what will he do? He'll go and kind of just stand between defenders and be looking for the ball to feet so he could then do a little trick and score a goal. Well, you don't score many goals like that. Your XG plummets when you play like that. Bruno Fernandes is now allowing Man United to breathe, and he's part of the solution. And we always said this, that Bruno, when he's got a more fluid attack around him, in this case, Eriksen, Martial, Rashford from the start, but Garnacho later on, a willing runner, only good things can happen. Just to kind of go into the goal a little bit more, the bit I love most about it, yet Garnacho deserves all the plaudits and the credits for kind of getting the ball back and then kind of moving it and then sliding it across. Seeing Marcus Rashford score a stone-cold number nine goal is a thing of beauty. No step-overs or brilliance or fantasticness. No, stay in the middle, stay off your man and tap the ball in the net. That was the best moment of the whole game for me. It really was, because, again, that was right in front of us. And we saw it, and we saw Garnacho beat the player and obviously slide it across. And so many times when that's happened to Man United over the years, there's no one in the middle, no one. But Marcus just checked his run, stayed onside, ball comes across, flicks it, goes through Edison's legs, a fantastic striker's goal. So now Marcus Rashford is kind of doing things that we've been talking about for a long time. Like, yeah, you can score these great goals, but go and score the ugly ones, the tap-ins, because your numbers will just double overnight. We've got that option now. I think he can do that. I think Martial can score tap-ins, but you've got to push him a little bit forward. And we know Weghorst will be able to do that as well.
Rob, is Marcus's future position under Ten Hag going to be as a number nine? We're going to tie this in with Weghorst, because I actually really like the idea of the signing. I'll be honest, you know, is he that big name sign that people want? No, he's not. United don't have any money. United are selling the Glazers are selling the club. Nothing's going to happen until we have new owners come in. There's one number nine long-term that I think Man United should be going for, and he plays for Napoli, Victor Osimhen, and I think he would be perfect. I don't actually want Harry Kane, and people are going to think I'm going to be crazy for saying that. Not because I don't think Kane's a fantastic player. I think he's world-class. The age is a little bit worrying. He will score 20, 30 goals for United. I don't doubt that. But he likes to drop deep. And I think that would interfere with the way Bruno plays as well. So I think you might get maybe not a Ronaldo-Bruno problem, but I think Kane doesn't fit the profile that United should be looking at. I think Victor Osimhen's the right player. I think Rashford could play this role. I look at Martial, you're going to have to manage his minutes. Garnacho's emergence on the left. Jadon Sancho will come back as well. So playing Marcus Rashford centrally, I think he might even emerge as United's first choice. But what is Weghorst going to bring? Because we've already spoken briefly earlier about he's a pressing machine. If you watch him in the World Cup, you know, he's actually a very intelligent player. He's, like you said, he's good in terms of laying off in the build-up, He's huge. He's 6 foot six. He's offering United something that they don't have. The commentators were saying, yes, United have actually got a short side and in terms of height, and they actually have. It's not a massive side, barring the likes of Varane. You know, obviously McTominay's on the pitch as well. So he will offer something at set pieces, and Christian Eriksen should have a real joy out of being able to have him as a target in the box. I like a lot. I actually really like the signing. I know he's at Burnley, but if people are judging him on that, then it's a bit ridiculous because they're a side that were going down. I think he's been great for Besiktas. Is he the long-term choice? No, he's not, but he offers United a plan B. And I'd start him against Palace. And I would, I actually think that he's going to be a real interesting signing. He's not like Ighalo in the sense of, I don't think it's a panic buy, in my opinion, or a panic loan. But I think he's just going to add something extra as Ten Hag carries on building this squad. I actually really wanted João Felix, and I thought Cody Gakpo as well was someone that United probably should have looked at. And I was watching him yesterday, obviously, where Liverpool got smashed. And I do think that he would have been perfect yesterday for United in the way that they were playing. I'm talking about Cody Gakpo, not João Felix. But I understand why United didn't go for him, because they might want a more traditional number nine. And that's why United didn't go for João Felix. But João Felix was the best player on the pitch for Chelsea before he got sent off the other day. So when I'm having a look at it, as we're moving forward, I understand the sort of profile that Ten Hag wants as a number nine.
Yeah.
He doesn't want someone who can play number nine, maybe like Gakpo. He wants someone that is comfortable, a bit more traditional, be able to hold up the play, bring Bruno and the likes of the others into it. And I'm excited to see what Weghorst can offer. And if he doesn't do well, he's only here for 6 months and he's gone.
Yeah, totally. Look, there's four things to unpack there. And I'm going to try and unpack them all in one go, because I think that's the way it should be. So talk about Rashford's position. You talked about other players there as well. We talk about Weghorst, obviously, because he's a new player at the football club and what he brings and what he doesn't bring. But I'm interested about the Kane and Osimhen thing, because they are really the two likely lads in terms of who the Man United go and get. Brand new owners, marquee striker, what do you go and choose? And there's varying kind of opinions on that. So we'll start at Rashford, first of all. I think with Marcus, will Marcus become a number nine? It doesn't matter. Why doesn't it matter? Because you want Marcus to be able to do two or three different things. We don't need a number on his back or a position to say you're the number nine. Marcus Rashford needs to be part of the attack. So that is in any of those four positions that we're looking at here on the screen at the moment. But ideally, he likes to play from the left. He's better from the left. He cuts on in on the right. He's got an amazing shot. He gets into the box. He's effectively a number nine in the left wing position, isn't he? It doesn't matter where he plays. Unpacked. Let's look at Weghorst. Why have you gone for Weghorst? What is the reason? Because obviously a lot of people just see two goals in his last 20 games for Burnley and they go, ugh. Well, the reason why you go with Weghorst is that he's in the top 5 or 10% of forwards in Europe that press. That's what he is. He's an elite pressing number nine. He allows you to play 4-3-3 better than you've played it previously. So we started this show explaining to you why this system is 4-3-3, moving into a kind of more like a 4-2-4, but being very top heavy. Weghorst lets you do that. When you go and look at all of his stats, he's also incredibly good at assisting and helping others. So he's a help forward. It's a bit like basketball. We talk about players when they go into other positions to help. He's that kind of player. He can go left, right, center. He can help people. He will push you up the pitch. So that's unpacking that. And as you said as well, short-term signing. And you say to him, hey, you do well, we'll sign you. 10 million quid. We need an extra striker just in the rotation. We'll sign you because we need a rotation in there. One doesn't have to counter the other, hey, Dodge, you know what I mean? So I want to end on Osimhen and Kane. There's no doubt that Osimhen could become the best striker in the world in the next few months and years. He's amazing. What he's doing at Napoli is amazing. Harry Kane is just on the cusp of scoring 200 goals. Might well have scored 200 goals by the time you watch this in the London Derby today, North London
Derby. Let's hope he does, to be honest.
Let's hope he does. But when you look at the metrics, and you look at the shape, you look at what they do and look at their function, there's no doubt that for Erik ten Hag, the striker that fits his system better is Harry Kane. Why? Because Osimhen does not have any counter-press metrics at all. Doesn't help, doesn't push, doesn't press. Doesn't do any of those things. If you bought Osimhen, you'd be buying him to do what Haaland does, score goals. Yeah, he's a killer. He's a killer in front of goal. Now, he can play the channel, and I'm sure that over time, you would be able to coach him to do this system, of course.
You absolutely could, Rob. Like, pressing isn't about ability, it's about mentality.
It's about mentality, but a lot of players just can't do it, Haydar, and that's why not everyone does it. This is the thing. Otherwise, everyone would do it, wouldn't you? That's how it works. So people say about, oh, Martial, what kind of forward is it? Is he? Well, Martial's never going to be that kind of top-end fulcrum of like Weghorst will be. Weghorst will go to the defender. He will. He'll push them. He'll go and push them that way. Doesn't matter if he's 6 foot six or 5 foot six. That's what he does. His stats show that. His game shows that. The reason why Kane is a better fit, forget about age and all of these things, because there's no doubt that I think Osimhen would be the better investment. No doubt about it. Like, Osimhen could be the best striker in the world in a year or two, or even 5 minutes' time. But if you're going to play this system, the fact that Harry Kane will allow someone run beyond him, like Martial does in this system, and still be elite at passing the ball, because Harry Kane is the best assister almost in world football at that. He's the best in the world, Haydar, at going from 9 to 10, dropping back. His metrics show all of that. If you can do that and have Rashford running one side or Garnacho running one side or Anthony the other side or Sancho the other side, you're in business. You're going to win a title. So that's, I think, the difference is that Harry Kane is almost a guarantee of goals. And look what Harry Kane does for Son when they're at their best. Son is what he is because of Harry Kane, not because of what Son is. Son can run beyond and become the striker. And that's, I think, what Ten Hag wants to do. He wants a striker that's going to do all of that work, but will sit in the pocket and play off people and play 1-2s and allow you to have an effective press. Now, that's going to be unpopular with some people. I've heard loads of people say to me this week, oh, but Harry Kane's this, that and the other. It doesn't matter what you think he is. It's what his metrics show to a manager and how a manager would like to use him. And there's no doubt, I think, with Harry Kane, is that if you put him in that team yesterday, I think Man United do win 5-1 because I think he plays play off him so much better. Martial went off the pitch and it took United 20, 30 minutes to kind of solve it. I don't really feel too much about Rashford being a 9, Haydar, because I think he's just good at playing channels and he's very direct and he reads the game. It's great to see him tap the ball in as a number 9. It means he can do other stuff that he wasn't been able to do before. But your ideal signing in that is Harry Kane. And Harry Kane has 1 year of his contract left in the summer.
Two questions, Rob. Just like, I understand what you're saying. And I think what people are overlooking is just how good Harry Kane actually is.
Yeah.
But I think the fact, you have to factor in this. The age. Got to factor in the age factor.
Yeah.
The salary. Okay, 1 year left, so maybe the fee won't be as much. But if you're paying $80 million for a 30-year-old who's got 1 year left, I don't think that represents great business and longevity. Because
Casemiro, Casemiro, like, yeah, this is Casemiro, the problem.
Hold on. Casemiro's injury record isn't that, touch wood, I don't want to go and jinx him, isn't as poor as Harry Kane's. Harry Kane's had consistent ankle injuries. Come on, he has.
Right, okay. No, I want to address that because Casemiro's had some really bad injuries in his career, right? And he's come back. Harry Kane has absolutely had loads of injuries in his career. If you look at the last 3 years as a snapshot, he's actually had nowhere near the amount of injuries. Now, we talked on previous shows about Harry Kane, about that being a problem, obviously being available. And you always say, you know, someone being fit is their superpower, isn't it? That's what you've always said. Harry Kane's not missed a lot of games in the last 2 or 3 years. He really hasn't. He's played pretty much all of them. And I also think, and we said this on The Promised Land in the last show, that Harry Kane has like Teddy Sheringham did, has learned to manage his body. Yeah. So he doesn't run like a nutter. He doesn't put his foot in. He doesn't do stupid stuff. He does all the classy stuff. And like you just said there, people underestimate how good a player he is, you know, what he does. So 30 years old, yeah, he'd be a high wage, but you're getting him for a much reduced fee. You might get him for under 100 million. And say he stays with you for 4 years, 3 or 4 years, and scores you 120 goals in that period, and you win a championship. It's exactly like the Casemiro signing. Casemiro was fifth choice at Real Madrid, fifth. And we kind of joke about that now, but we bought a player for 65 million. It was fifth choice. That's mad. But we did it, and we did it in good faith. And we always said, if it works, great. But if it doesn't work, we're probably going to be sat here going, why did you buy a 30-year-old for 65 million? Would I pay 80-odd million for Harry Kane? Oh, my God, yes. Give me him. And give me both of them. Give me Osimhen and Kane. You know,
who's
that's
more
maybe
likely,
how...
though? Who's more likely to come, do you think, at this stage? We're looking at it going into... From what you've heard from your sources, who is more likely? Because... Listen, if Ten Hag wants Weghorst, I back it. If Ten Hag wants, you know, whoever, I back it. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, he's the manager. And while we can all have our opinions, he's the one sitting there with the tactics board, with the vision, with the 3 to 5 year plan. This is who he's going to bring in, etc. For example, you know, United have got a conundrum in midfield. Is it Frankie de Jong? Is it Enzo Fernandez? Who I'm so happy, as it stands right now, Chelsea, the aka United 2.0 under Todd Woodward, or whatever his name is, or Ed Bowley.
Todd Bowley.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous what they're doing. But, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, you know, Enzo Fernandez in this side, as much as I really like Frankie de Jong, Enzo Fernandez would be fantastic next to Casemiro. So this is all these, this is Ten Hag's decisions. But when I'm looking at it as well, I'm looking at longevity, Rob. Like, Osman could be United striker for 10 years. And then, it, you know, the outlay almost is worth it, you know. So who do you think at this stage, from what you've heard, is more likely?
Well, first of all, Enzo Fernandez is not happening. He's got to have a release clause, 150 million, to never come into Man United. That's done. So that's that. So it might go to Chelsea or someone that would trigger it. I think when you kind of look at Osman and Kane and how gettable they are, your kind of choice is going to be this. And it might not matter with new owners. Like, if you have, you know, very, very rich owners come from somewhere who want to make a statement, they could buy anyone, couldn't they? You know, could buy Mbappe. It's just the way it goes. I think when you look at this, Osman, the way that his value is going up and his contractual situation and what he'll do at Napoli means that Harry Kane is much more gettable. Harry Kane's going to have a year left at the end of this season. And if Tottenham haven't performed to the standard that they expect, and I say not in the Champions League, which is a chance at the moment, Harry Kane is gone. He's out of that football club. He wants to go. That means it's likely that Harry Kane will either go to Manchester United or Newcastle United. He's got to go to one of those two clubs. That's what it comes. That's in terms of the wage package. It will be there. United can afford him. Newcastle can afford him. But who do you want? Who do people want? Who's Ten Hag want? If Ten Hag could go and get a striker tomorrow that he can drop in there with very little coaching, taking his own attributes, making him better and scoring goals and making everyone else around him. Sorry, people. He's going to buy Harry Kane. Osimhen is a project. Osimhen would be a £150 million gamble. We said also in our other show the other day, Osimhen has done really well in Serie A, and we have no idea what he would do in a different league. We don't know yet. We don't know how good he really is. He could come to the Premier League and look at all these players that have gone to Chelsea that are supposedly great in other leagues, and they just don't cut it. You just said João Felix. I'm so happy we didn't take João Felix. Why? Because João Felix doesn't let you play this system. João Felix wants to go and stand where Rashford is, and Rashford then has to play the nine, and Felix can't play the nine because he can't do that function. It becomes a mess. He puts foot through someone because he shouldn't be put in that game because he's trying to impress, and now he's out for three games. So stupid. I think that was actually what Chelsea did with him. So I didn't want João Felix because João Felix is a rental for 6 months and he's going to cost you 20 million in wages.
You wanted
and
Gakpo,
a fee.
And you were clear about that.
I wanted Gakpo. Why did I want Gakpo? Because Gakpo can play center, left, right, 10. Because he fits the system. So Gakpo went and played for Liverpool yesterday. I watched the game. And had a tough time because Liverpool are not anywhere near as good as they were. And I was saying, I think to myself, Gakpo's gone there thinking, I'm going to win titles. And he's turned up and gone, these lot are not actually that good at the moment. Oh, my God. So he's going to help them maybe become better. And I think he'd have done really well at Man United in this system. Really, really well. He'd have fit this. This is a very Dutch system. He's Dutch, so it would have fitted. But for me, Felix is a mercurial talent. But there's a reason why he's not at his current club now, why he's gone to Chelsea. He's there for holiday, Haydar. He's on incredible wages. And he's not going to do anything at Chelsea. And if he does do anything at Chelsea, they're 10th at the moment. So that's a kind of, it's a different set of circumstances. I'm happier with Weghorst because I think he fulfills the function in a much more needy way that the manager needs. Manager wants that player who can do X, Y, and Z. And he scored goals previously to Burnley. He scored goals since Burnley. He had a really good World Cup. And he's a fighter. He's a warrior. He'll go and put his neck on the block and fight for the team. João Felix won't do that. Sorry, João Felix is not going to be that player. And I think when you look at it, Osimhen, yeah, probably the best investment. If you buy him for 150 million, 3 or 4 years' time, might be worth 300 million. But we don't want to be selling our players, do we? I'd rather have Kane then in that situation for 3 or 4 years. And that you win titles immediately and takes you on another level than Osman. Or, of course, the dream scenario is just buy them both. Just get them both. And yeah, and, but then you have to lose players, don't you, Haydar? Then you might sell a Martial, you know, move him out of football club. So there's then those, but that's not a question for today, is it? That's the whole point. So lot to unpack there. But I like Rashford playing where he's playing at the moment, left and through the centre. I think you're right. Sancho coming back fits his system really well. But Weghorst gives you another option at number nine. And it's all very fluid. And this is what you need to win games. And this is what you need to become title contenders.
And we'll end on that, Rob. As always, guys, thank you so much for all the fantastic comments. Make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. Give us a retweet as well on Twitter as well. The United Mastercast is back. back. Rob, what's your final word? You know, United are going into Palace, and then they've got the Arsenal, obviously, on Sunday. So that's going to be a massive game. But Palace cannot be taken lightly. United need to rotate. Casemiro is at risk of, you know, being out of the Arsenal game if he gets the yellow card against Palace. So I would definitely be resting him. But going into that game, you know, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, we'd start Weghorst, rotate the squad, get Antony starting on that right-hand side. I'd give Garnacho a start as well. Rest Martial. Maybe even rest Rashford, to be honest with you, because I think United could manage his minutes going forward. You know, he has played quite a lot of football. So, yeah, what would you be expecting from Ten Hag? Do you think there'd be much rotation, or do you think he'll go with generally the same? I see Martinez slotting back in at the back.
Don't rotate a winning team. Don't do it. Just change. Just get your tactics what you want to do, and go and put that on the opposition. Go and put that on Palace. Say to them, this is what we do, and we're good at what we do. You change for us. Because that hasn't been a thing at Man United for so long. So I'm not looking at Rashford. I will rest Rashford if Rashford's got a knock and can't play. But again, Ten Hag said one beautiful thing at the end of the game yesterday, and I really liked it. He said, to be good, you've got to suffer. And he said, Marcus could play. He suffered. It hurt. So what? We won the game. That is the mentality. I don't want any more rotation. We're at the point of the season now, Hayden, January, February, where you just rotate when you have to, and you'll get natural rotation through injuries like Wan-Bissaka and Dalot. So that's an obvious one. You know, Casemiro had a knock at the end of the game. He might need to be taken out, not because of the card. I think if the card is there and they're thinking of that, he plays. I think with Rashford, if he's got that knock, say Martial's got that knock, then yeah, they would be the rotation. It becomes a more natural process. But I don't want to see extreme rotation. We're not Man City. We don't have that kind of depth. And I think the players sitting on the bench are on the bench for a good reason, and they're good options from the bench. So like, yeah, Garnacho might get a start because he's earned that start. Antony was out of the team, not because he didn't deserve it. I heard people before the game yesterday go, no, it's because he's rubbish. This is just after he scored a worldie in the top corner against Everton. Oh, he's rubbish. It's like, is he? Maybe he doesn't do what you want him to do. But I can see Antony starting again, and that Man United kind of just keeping that function with Palace. They'll play a 4-1-5, Haydar. So you're going to have to play someone either Casemiro or one of them in that number six role. Might well be Eriksen, and then you might play with those forwards going up the top end of the pitch.
On Antony, I think we'll be talking about him in many occasions. But what I will say about him is off the ball, and this is the final point I'm going to make, is off the ball, he's amazing. He's looking a bit one-dimensional. He's not worth 90 million. 5 or 6 goals in, 15 appearances. That's a good start. And he'll only get better. So hopefully he'll start using that right foot a little bit more, because it is frustrating. But look, guys, thank you
again
so much for joining.
Ryan Giggs never did. So why should he?
Yeah. Well, look, if you can even have half the career of Ryan Giggs, then he'll have a great career. So,
of course.
Guys, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button as well. Give Rob a follow on @_Rob_B. I'm off Twitter at the minute, but you can find me on @ManUnitedMC. And we'll see you all next time. We'll